Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin. This is part two of the Double Standard series. I'm here with our co-host, Kira Soltanovich, our guest, Dr. Stuart Fishbein, Sarah Shahi, and Steve Howey.
So this nurse comes in. My wife is getting really close to pushing, and the doctor's not going to make it in time. It's just going really fast. He had gone home, and she's on all fours. And this nurse, I'm a big guy. She comes in and makes me feel small. She is ginormous. And she says, okay, honey, let's get over onto your back and open up your legs. And I just was so shocked, but I just turned around and looked at her, and I said, I hope you're talking to me, because she's comfortable in that position. And I thought I would just make that joke and everything would be okay. She was not having it. She's like, no, she's got to get over on her back right now, son. And I was like, I'm 40 years old, son. And I think she was younger than me, but bigger. She was big.
Yeah.
And we start like going at it. And then the resident came in who was going to catch the baby. And she's like, what's all the heat about? And I said, my wife's comfortable in that position. She's really wants to force her over onto her back. And she's like, I know where the baby's going to come from. I don't care. She can push in any position. And so she stormed off to some other room, that nurse. And, you know, 4 minutes later, the baby just dropped out.
Thank God that there are some people like her,
that resident,
the resident,
yeah,
she, at she, hot, she you know, that makes
totally
all the difference
cool.
In the world.
She was cool for the whole process. And then we had our fourth baby at home. Just, yeah. You know.
Did that resident stay in the community? You remember?
I don't know. I was told, first of all, I'm face blind, so I don't recognize anybody.
Right.
Can I ask a medical question?
Yeah.
If your wife had transitioned and laid down on her back, would that have slowed down labor?
Probably not at that point,
okay.
But it can. I mean, the whole idea that they went to the hospital when she was 3 centimeters early to get the antibiotic, and then an hour later she's 3 centimeters or 3.5, that would be not surprising at all, because just the getting in your car and driving to the hospital and all that stuff disrupts the whole thing. It slows things down, which is sort of why people end up getting Pitocin and ruptured membranes and stuff so easily at the hospital, because hospital isn't designed to have you sitting there doing nothing, but the hospital disrupts the normal mammalian instinct of laboring when you feel safe and secure and unfettered and uninterrupted.
Right.
When any mammal is interrupted, whether it's your dog or a horse or a deer or anything, by a predator or by little kids running in the room, what happens to them? They put out adrenaline. Adrenaline stops the contractions. They get up and they run away. Mm-hmm. That's what mammals do. It's fight or flight. So same thing happens to humans. It's just that the modern medical model doesn't really think of you guys as mammals. They don't think that way. But it's classic. People will be booming along at home. They'll come to the hospital, and then the contractions will be every 8 minutes. And they'll go, you know, well, we got to do something. Now you're here.
Right.
And the something should have been, you know, like what you did, which was very smart, which was go home.
Go to a
although a lot
place.
Of people don't live 10 minutes from the hospital.
Yeah.
So
right.
They need to go for a walk, or they need to go privately. But, that's the beauty of having a doula or a monitoress at home, is to keep you home as long as possible if you're going to go to the hospital, so that when you get to the hospital, you're already in that transition or, you know, ready, second stage of labor, where nothing really, whatever position, nothing's going to stop it at that point, pretty much.
I see that with my doula clients. We're laboring home. They look great. They're strong. They're confident. They're healthy. They're happy. They're just really powering through it. You know, it's intense. It's uncomfortable, but also seemingly somewhat enjoyable. And then all of a sudden, literally within 2 hours of getting to the hospital, some of those clients look frail, pale, and like they're just going to die. And it's not because labor has progressed more, because when we stay home with those clients who are doing home birth, they get even stronger and more excited about it. It's the shift. I think it's the shift of like you're in that environment where you feel so safe and so relaxed and so unobserved. And things
in control.
And in control. It's your territory. And then just putting on a hospital gown just, doesn't make you feel all that safe. And peeing in a cup. And I noticed like shoving the emergency shunt into your vein because we think you're going to die, but we might be able to save you.
And don't forget to sign here about surgery and death.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
None of that
between
seems
contraction.
Like,
I mean, even just like when I first got wheeled up, you know, to my husband was parking the car, and so an orderly or somebody wheeled me up, and the woman was like, probably the same one. Was this at Cedars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big.
Big. Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
All right.
She's the head nurse, by the way.
Is she?
Yeah. I'm face-blind, but
I recognize her.
Yeah. The first thing she asked me was like, can I see your insurance? Can I see your ID? And it's like, I'm not checking into a Holiday Inn Express. Like, can we do this? Just, you know, I'm here. I've already pre-registered. Isn't that the whole point?
Do you have your hospital points card?
Get a stamp. The 10th baby's free.
Continental breakfast.
But I did feel immediately that feeling of the defeat. They put you in this mental frame of we are in charge now, which I think is not the right way to treat a woman in labor.
You know, there's a lot of people that are, you know, the anti-home birth people out there speak loudly, and they often talk about, you know, making the, you know, one of the solutions would be to make the hospital more hospitable or more home-like. Talked briefly about it earlier. You mentioned it earlier. That would be great, except that can never happen.
Right.
Because the policies and procedures of the hospital and their management and administration are not going to let you come there and be yourself. They, once you're in their space, I mean, for, get this. If you're laboring at home for 20 hours at home, all right, no one's monitoring that baby. All right. The minute you come into the hospital, all right, now the baby has to be monitored, and they won't even, if you break your bag of waters, they make it difficult for you to even go for a walk. Mm. But you walked in with broken bag of waters, and you were home with a broken bag of waters, and no one really was worried about it. But now you're in the hospital.
Right.
Now the hospital's risk management team thinks that it's, you know, a possible problem, and so therefore we're going to overtreat everybody, which then gets to that point of disempowerment that we were just talking about.
We treat everybody like they are high risk. Everybody.
But let me ask you a question though, because what gave me confidence in her is the realization that women have been doing this for thousands of years. I know her, she was really strong, and she had already made the decision she was going to do that. Absolutely. That her decision gave me confidence. How did the anti-home birth in community, I guess if there is one, what do they say to that, about that this has been going on for thousands of years?
Well, they would just say that people die in childbirth, and the
more babies died.
More babies died then, and more mothers died then. And that partially is true. I mean, certainly women bled to death, women hemorrhaged, women lacerated. Babies would be stuck in utero, and both mother and baby would die from infection because they couldn't get them out. That's the whole the advent of forceps. And you should look back in the obstetrical history. You look at some of the devices and instruments they had in the late 1800s.
Well, before the 1890s, they didn't have antiseptics.
Yeah, well, before Semmelweis, they didn't even have that. But they have these things that would do things to the baby to be able to get it out, not alive, but at least to save the mother. Mm. So, the pendulum has swung way too far, because in 1970, which was considered the modern era, the infant mortality and cerebral palsy and all the birth injuries to babies is about the same then as it is now. Nothing's really changed, but the cesarean section rate has gone from 5% to 32%. Wow. All right, and we've really got nothing significant to show for it. We've got a loss of skill, and we've got a loss of women, 2, 3, 4 generations of American women who have been taught to believe that their bodies will grow babies that are too big to come out, or that they can't do certain things, or that their body will not function without modern medicine. And the truth is that if you're left alone, the chance of you having a successful birth is much greater. And the likelihood of something going wrong if you're not meddling, restricting movement, starving a woman, interrupting her, putting her on Pitocin, the chance of something going wrong suddenly, which is everybody's big fear, is much, much smaller. All right. That's why if you select your clients properly for home birth, you don't see that sudden deterioration that you often see in the hospital, which leads to the emergency cesarean section. And thank God we had an operating room, because they just saved my baby. Now, sometimes that's true. And certain people belong in the hospital, and we're not here to, none of us in the home birth world really want to bash the hospital. We've been saying things about Nurse Ratched and other things like that. But ultimately, the hospital is a great place for certain people. But 85% of women don't necessarily have any problem, and yet they're treated, as you said, as if they have a medical problem.
Even our first two births that we did have at the hospital, before we had our home birth, called them home birth at the hospital. I thought they were fine. My wife and I had really good experiences there. But on the third one, there was a lot of pressure to intervene where I didn't see intervention necessary. And by then I had seen home birth. So by the fourth one, we just decided to save the gas and have the baby at home.
Yes.
So you were 32 weeks with baby number one and breech, and then you come in, I call you cutie pie, almost get decked, and then what happens?
And then you turned wolf the first time I saw you.
Wolf turned himself.
Oh, wolf turned right, himself. Right. In my there we hand. Go.
Careful of the language.
In the finesse there we go. Of my hands. Yeah.
Well, then what did I pay you for then?
I'm just chatting. Really. I got you relaxed enough.
Okay. For
to
wolf
let
to turn.
Wolf to turn in more room in your womb. Is what we created.
Did you come see him specifically because you were breached at 32 weeks, or had you been seeing him already?
No, it was specifically, it was Davey and Yvonne both sent me to him.
She was trying really hard not to have to come see me.
Would you suggest that women who are breached at 32 weeks start seeing you?
Oh, yeah.
I think all women should be seeing chiropractors, but you know, a lot of people say, well, let's just see what happens, and if by 36 weeks the baby hasn't turned, then we'll start sending you to the chiropractor.
But that's a good point. We have a whole podcast on Breach called Breach 101. Long story short, at 32 weeks, approximately 90% of babies are already head down. At birth, 96 to 97% of babies are head down. So more than half of the babies that are breached at 32 weeks will be head down. Just over half at birth. So there's not, you know, a reason to panic at that point. But at 32 weeks, we get more like 90% of our babies to get head down. So it is a bit of an insurance policy. And then also, if you wait till you're 36 or 37, then it's really hard to get them head down. We still have a fairly good success rate, but it's a lot lower than 90%. So the Webster technique also that we use for breached babies, chiropractic technique to improve the function of the mother's pelvis and create more functional space for the baby to turn, is not a breech turning technique. It's just a pelvic improving technique. And when you have a more functional pelvis, babies are more likely to want to and be able to get head down. So there's no reason not to do it at 32 weeks. The external version, the medical procedure, has some side effects, significant potential side effects associated with it that...
And cost. Right.
Well, we're not cheap.
No. I'm saying that I thought you were talking about external version.
The external version. I'm saying the chiropractic is not. You know, it's an expense as well. But it's, you know, we don't have the risks associated with it that would make us want to wait till the baby's at full term.
Well, I as a birth practitioner would think that my clients who do see chiropractors often do have easier times with their labors. They often the babies are in better position. I just think that, you know, even though the Webster technique is supposedly for breech babies, I don't see why you wouldn't use it on pregnant
It's
woman.
Actually, it's not specifically for breech babies. He developed
but
it.
But people think it is. That's
people
what
think
saying.
It is because so many babies turn after we do it. But Dr. Webster developed it because he basically had this pelvic paradox. So sometimes you have this really small baby in a nice, healthy pelvis that just gets stuck on the way out. And sometimes you have this big baby in a tiny little pelvis that just comes through very smoothly. What's going on there? We're not looking at function in pelvimetry. We're looking at size of the pelvis versus size of the baby, but that's static. There's function in a pelvis that's functional and dynamic. It can open up, it can expand and contract like a rubber band letting a basketball through, and the baby's head goes from like 12, 13 centimeters down to 9 centimeters. That's dynamic. You can't see that on a picture. But with chiropractic, the concept for Webster was if you had a more stretchy rubber band, then the basketball would be able to get through easier. That's what he was trying to accomplish. But after doing it on a whole bunch of women who were breached, their babies started to turn. So we do it, but you don't have to wait till the end. We do it all pregnancy long.
What's the main difference between the two?
Between what two?
There are two techniques, right?
Oh, the chiropractic technique is about improving the muscles. Well, it's really the ligaments and joints of the pelvis. If the joints are stuck and don't move, you have a kind of a pelvis that resists babies moving around inside them. If you have a pelvis that's very dynamic and moves around a lot, I'm moving my hands like people can see me on this podcast. If you have a pelvis that moves around a lot, then it can accommodate the baby's movements better. What the medical approach is to physically try to, through the belly, try to force the baby into the ideal position.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And what are those side effects?
Why don't you talk about the side effects?
Well, again, it depends on which world you live in. If you live in the fear-based medical world, the side effect that everybody's worried about is causing a placenta to separate early or injuring the baby or causing a cord entanglement or something that the baby's heart rate will go down and won't come back up and you need an emergency cesarean section. Now, I know that happens. But, you know, weird things do happen. I've been doing versions for 30 years and never seen that happen. But that's part of the reason that when you do a version at a hospital, you end up basically being a medical operative procedure. You a lot of times they're giving you an epidural. They give you something to relax your uterus. You have an IV. You have an OR crew standing by. It's a setup for failure. When you think about, if I were a woman, how am I going to relax in that setting?
I know. That's why I thought, right. Geez, I would maybe go into labor.
The first time I saw one, I was like, where's the guy with the flame retardant just in case she spontaneously combusts? I was worried.
Now, I understand that that's the model by which they care for people. And so that's what they do. They would think that, well, first of all, they think pretty much everything that I do is out there near Pluto. Focus. But you know, I do versions in the office or people's homes. And I don't use medication. And we often use hypnosis. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
so that they believe the baby has turned?
No, so they bark like a dog. And then the dogs, so they can deliver either.
Every time they hear a dog barking, baby turns around.
No, it's I would say the success rate's about the same. And again, you also have to select your clients properly for that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have a woman who's having her first baby who's 39 weeks and the baby's Frank Breech and 8 pounds and she has very little fluid, the chance of that baby turning with aversion is extremely small. You have a woman having her third baby who's 38 weeks with an 8-pound baby, and her abdomen is much softer, and the success rate is pretty much significant, which is sort of, it's an interesting phenomenon. I'll just digress sure. for just a second. Of the breaches that I've done at home, 85 to 86% of them have been first-time moms, what we call primips, and only about 14% have been multips. And so the question is, why? And well, the answer is, it's a lot of the multips, it's easy to turn their babies to head down so you don't see it. What's freaky about that is that there are a few breech centers around the country that are beginning to form, and there's one in Portland, Oregon. I think there's one in San Francisco. The odd thing is that they won't do primip breeches. I mean, they won't allow primip breeches to deliver to labor. They'll section them. But the whole idea, if 85% of your breeches are going to be primips and you're not going to allow them to labor, then you're not diminishing the cesarean section rate, and you're not doing, I mean, what's the point?
I think one of those breech centers that will only do multips right now, they're getting their feet wet. You know, their comfort zone, they're more comfortable with multips because there's already been a vaginal birth. The odds of a baby getting stuck on the way through are a bit less. And so, you know, you have the corporate higher up liability team saying, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And I say, well, what if we start with these moms that already had vaginal birth?
What about tri-tips?
Delicious.
What's the success rate of tri-tips?
Delicious
babies.
My
hospital doesn't allow tri-tips.
My first kid was 10 pounds. He was almost like a tri-tip.
Wow.
Yeah.
10 pounds?
Boom. Through the lobby.
Supersize me.
The first one, yeah.
That's a big baby.
So 3 hours wasn't so bad.
No, it's not bad.
Right. He was probably 9 pounds when he started pushing.
Yeah.
I love it.
We are going to take a quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, it's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and use your code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order.
Sarah, when did you, and Steve, when did you guys meet Dr. Stu?
We met Dr. Stu.
Windy.
I'll tell you exactly.
Windy?
It was windy. It was sunny. There was not a lot of clouds out.
It was like late July, and I was in New York, and I had come to LA for Comic-Con. And I remember I called you, and I said, I need a guy.
Oh,
I need a guy with like a wand, like one of those ultrasound things, to confirm a pregnancy. I peed on the stick, it's positive. I just want the confirmation.
Let me back up for a second. You had your first baby at home with a midwife.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you met Dr. Stu
through you.
In relation to
midwives, don't do ultrasounds. So
well, that's right. Midwives don't do ultrasounds. And also, I was in New York, and I was coming back
to
LA.
In New York.
That's right. I was filming in New York, and then I was coming back to LA.
So we have to confirm that my swimmers work.
Right. So
why did you think you thought you might be pregnant?
No. I peed on the stick. I was pregnant. I went to the urgent care that was across from my apartment
in New York.
And I was coming to LA for the weekend for more work, and I called you and I said, hey, I need a guy with an ultrasound. I need him to just tell me that I'm pregnant and that there's really something going on in there. And you sent me two names. Rothbart, what's his name?
He's my associate.
That's right. You sent me his name and Dr. Stuart Fishbein. Mm-hmm. But I saw their names and I'm like, Rothbart. And I'm like, Fishbein? What's a Fishbein? I'm like, I've got to meet Fishbein. I'm like, what is this? I'm like, I've never heard that name before.
Yeah, but they're both Jewish doctors, so you couldn't go wrong either way, right? But
what? Still, Fishbein is Jewish?
My last name is, I notice people with unusual last names because my last name is Jahansu Shahi. That's my real
slow the
end legal down. Last name. So when I see an unusual last name, I'm like, time? What is that?
Yeah, really? Say it again.
Does that even fit on Twitter?
No.
It's what? Say it again.
Jahansu Shahi.
Oh, so Shahi's a
spit my eye.
It made a left and then a hard right.
Jahansu Sushi? Yeah, Jahansu Shahi. And
Mazel Tov.
Yeah, Mazel Tov. So, you know, I made my appointment with Dr. Stu, and I remember going into your office, and I remember I thanked you profusely. I'm like, oh, thank you so much for doing this. I just need a quick confirmation of pregnancy. Dr. Berlin, and you were like, oh, Elliot, I'll do anything for Elliot. Remember when he was like, I love Elliot, I'll do anything for Elliot.
Almost anything.
Don't
get any ideas.
I was just getting ideas.
I'm not dealing with Gracie, so don't.
And so, yeah, so he's like, all right, you know, let's see if we can do this the civilized way and not have to go up. So I lay down, and we had our other son, we had Wolf with us at the time. And so we sit down and you put the wand on. And he puts the wand.
We did it on the belly, right?
It's like a transducer.
What's it called?
Transducer.
Transducer.
Wand would imply sort of going up the
lobby.
Through the lobby.
Going up the aha. Going up the aha.
You were more in the penthouse.
So we put the transformer. What's it? Translucer?
Transducer.
Transducer. We put that on the belly.
The wand.
We put it on the belly. And this was his first reaction. He went, oh. And he looked away from me. And and I was like, what was that? What was that? Like he split his eye contact with me. He looked away from me. And I went, what? What happened? What is that? What's going on? And
then he threw up the peace sign.
And then he turned back and he threw up the peace sign too. And I didn't get it. I was like, what do you mean? I'm like, what is this? What it's?
Yeah, I never really know how to tell somebody that. When
what were you? You know.
So then, I turned away because I'm thinking like, well, do I come with the funny thing? Do I come with a straight line? Do I, you know?
Haven't you been doing this long enough to know?
Yeah, but I didn't know you guys.
Right.
I mean, I just met you.
It was the first time meeting.
So and then Steve. Steve, he literally, like, yeah, he got it. I didn't get it, but he got it, and he jumped so high. I've never seen him jump so high. His knees, like, almost hit his chin. And then he started hyperventilating in the corner. Do you remember this? Huh. You grabbed the wall, and you kneeled over and squatted and started breathing really heavily. And I'm looking at him going, what the fuck is he doing? Why is he doing that? And Dr. Stu still hasn't said twins to me yet, so I'm like, what the fuck? What's going on with all these weirdos in this office right now?
It wasn't really that much time didn't pass, just so you know.
Right, but it felt like it. It felt like it.
It was
you know, no offense.
I am a storyteller.
No offense, but the proposal, nothing made sense to you. This, nothing made sense to you. Why does it take you? So you're like, what's going on, everybody?
It was just not in my reality. It was not in my reality.
I mean, would it have helped if you just took two pies and right in your face?
So then he said twins. Dr. Stu said
what?
Twins.
What the fuck? Yeah. What the fuck? What the fuck?
He didn't make twins. Why are you getting mad at the doctor? It wasn't his fault.
I got mad that he told me. And then...
And I was like, babe, babe.
Yeah, you grabbed my ankles because I was laying down. And then, go ahead.
And then I was just like, babe, calm down. And you're like, no, what the fuck?
And then, that's when I went, you. You did this to me.
Yeah. And plug then, my special.
That's right. And then, yeah.
Except that's how twins are,
that's
twins
right.
are made that
and
way.
And then that's when...
it's your own fault.
Dr. Stu said, it's not his fault. He, like, inserts a million guys. Like... This was you. He was like, "This, you did this all by yourself. You dropped an extra egg."
Aw,
those damn legs in the air.
You dropped the egg on me. Wow.
I got on a flight to go back to work for the next 6 months, about 2 hours after that doctor's appointment.
Wow. Can you drop an extra egg by doing the leg in the air?
I don't think so.
No, it has to be growing during the weeks before that.
Can you will it?
She could
probably. With hypnosis,
yeah, because she did
hypnofertility.
You wanted twins?
No,
but I remember there was a moment. I remember there was. I did not want twins, but I remember there was a moment when I was standing on the corner of Times Square, and I was just. I remember I was just like, twins, that'd be cool. I wonder what that would be like. And then that was it. That was the only kind of.
No, but before that, you wanted to get pregnant.
Oh, I was so baby ready.
So you think she was so into it, she just like overdid it?
Yeah, she willed it. Willed it.
But look, I'm so glad they're here. I wouldn't have it any other way. But then I got on a plane and 2 hours later, and it just never, it took forever for it to sink in. It still doesn't sink in. I'm looking at both of them. Yeah, I worked on a show and I had to do a lot of stunts, and I told them I didn't want to do the stunts because I didn't want to do anything to harm
pregnant.
My babies. And
oh, you did?
No, I did tell them. It was like a series of bombs I was dropping. Like the first one was, hey guys, I think I'm pregnant. And they're like, oh, that doesn't work for your character. And I'm like, yeah,
so
but it works for my life. And then they're like, okay, well, let us know when you know for sure. I'm like, okay, I'm going to LA this weekend and I'll let you know. Then it's like, hey, so... I'm having twins. my doctor says I need to be wrapped by a certain date. And that took a long time for them to get, because I remember they had lawyers calling you, or they had the Warner Brothers doctor call you. They had a few.
Figure out what the date was?
Vaguely.
Yeah, they didn't.
But when she should probably stop.
It was when I was 6 months.
Oh, doing stunts? You were still doing stunts?
Well, I should stop working.
Squibs on the stomach.
Ooh. They wanted me to, I don't know if you guys know what squibs are, but they're just little.
Fake bullets, right?
They're little explosives.
Kind of. They're mini explosives
that have fake blood pouches in front of them.
Right.
So when they explode, it looks like you got shot.
Yeah.
But they're little explosives.
Right. And they wanted me to squib my belly when I was 5.5 months pregnant.
That makes sense.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
That makes sense.
So we didn't, and it was very different. And the thing is I'm really grateful that I have had these different pregnancies, because, you know, I remember, you know, the thought of being pregnant was just sounded so alien to me. And then I got pregnant with one baby, and then having it at home just sounded so far-fetched. And then I had it at home. And then the idea of having twins, it's like, who has twins? Like, what? That's suicide. And then I had twins. Then you have them at home. It's like, what? And then I did that. And so it's like, I'm grateful to be able to talk about this, to hopefully encourage people or inspire people, you know, to do something that they feel like they couldn't
do. To drop an extra egg.
To drop the extra
egg.
Will
it, man. Will it.
But it was very different. Like with the first one, I worked out every day. You know, he was 40 plus 2 days late. And I walked 5 miles a day when I couldn't work out anymore. And I was just, you know, just walked. With the twins, it happened. I got big so quickly.
How'd you hide that in your work?
In the show?
Yeah.
They just did, because I didn't gain anything.
Holding
from
a lot
here.
Of grocery bags?
No. Oh. So it was just, you know, they just kept the shots
camera
tight.
When you say here, you mean like chest up?
Oh, yeah. That's what. Yeah. Sorry again. So, but I couldn't work out. You know, I really had to let it go. I couldn't work out. I remember I started going for long walks, and I think I called you, and I'm like, I called Yvonne. I called somebody, and I said, these contractions, like it just happening. I don't feel comfortable. They're like, then just stop. You're high risk because you have two. Just stop. If you're feeling uncomfortable, listen to your body.
Listen.
Like, just don't. Give it up.
Also, when you're pregnant and you already have kids or a kid, everything changes. You don't have time to take care of yourself as much. You just can't. It's impossible. It's a different world.
Yeah, and then I get to, you know, the part where I'm, I don't know, 30 plus weeks now, and I'm just huge. I'm very big. I mean, when I was about 4 months pregnant, people were like, any day now, huh? And, you know, and so now at 30-something weeks, I was just big. And walking was uncomfortable. Sitting was uncomfortable. Breathing was uncomfortable. Driving was everything was just, and I kept asking Doc, I'm like, should I be on bed rest? And, you know, he was like, no, you do what you feel like you need. You can, if you feel like you need to put yourself on bed rest, then put yourself on bed rest. So
was a twin pregnancy different for you, Steve?
How did it change for you, Steve?
Did you feel bigger?
How was it? Did you want to lie down and be on bed rest?
I was so hard.
He's been on bed rest for a
it
long
time. It was bigger. No.
No. Okay.
We were together for a lot of it, though, right?
She's in New York. I was taking care of Wolf in L.A., and she was in New York.
I had Wolf.
Back and forth?
Wolf was with me.
Not back and forth?
I don't remember it that way.
No, I think he did go back and forth. You're right. I think.
I'll set you guys straight. Whatever you need to know about your relationship, just.
Yeah.
How was it to be away from him for 12 weeks?
Pregnant Wolf? With twins. I mean, you had more kids than he had with you than he had with him.
That's right. No, it's awful. Anytime you're away from your kids, it's horrible. It's the worst.
But what about being away from your husband? Because you didn't mention that part.
Well, she didn't ask me about that part. I'm curious. No, it was awful. It was all awful because it was, you know, we find out we're having twins and then I'm on a plane leaving. That opportunity to digest this together to, you know, I remember when I had to get an OB in New York just for a couple routine checks. And Dr. Stu helped me find somebody. And you made some phone calls for me, I think. And
Jewish doctor with a funny sounding name?
No.
No?
He was an Asian guy.
Oh.
He was the guy in Business of Being Born.
Oh.
He was that guy's associate.
Okay.
Cool.
So. Yes.
And that guy's Jewish.
Jacques Moritz's partner,
right? That's right.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
And you know, like when we were 14 weeks, we wanted to find out the sex. We FaceTimed Steve in L.A. Remember that? Oh. And that's when he was like, three lines. I think it's a girl.
It sounds tight. It sounds like a really touching FaceTime moment.
No, was it different for me? For you? I mean, how much of this stuff does affect men?
That's what I want to know. That's where my question is. Was it different for you? Second pregnancy with the twins versus the first pregnancy with one baby?
After the first one was born, it was really hard for me, just because everything was so different. That her and I had, like, it was just hard. It was like, because now it's like there's three. And so we were both working. So any energy that was left over went to the baby.
Oh, so you guys just, okay. Like a lot of couples.
A lot of couples,
like, not so much.
No more of us. It's all there.
It's all going to the kids.
It was like, what is going on?
So it's not even necessarily because it was twins. It was just like that.
It was, and so what happened, I think, is that we got to a good place years after that. And then so I was nervous. I was excited. I was nervous, excited. The days were long and short at the same time. And so it was all, you know, getting ready for, you know, blast off. And like, how was it going to happen? And then, you know, looking back on it, it was great. It was great.
The pregnancy was great, or the
birth
was great?
The pregnancy was great, yeah. I mean,
did you guys bond a lot over the fact that you're having this unique twins experience?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really nice.
That was
it
really
was hard being in New York because we couldn't bond. And there was and I was so nauseous and so sick, and I had nobody with me to, you know, it was just me by myself. So any kind of midnight runs to go get pickles or whatever it was, I mean, that was me having to do everything. And I was working 16 hours a day, and it was just, and fighting battles at work. Like, no, I'm not going to do that stunt. Like, no, I'm pregnant. I told you, bring the stunt double. And so that was a whole other set of politics I was having to deal with on top of this. And I was by myself, and it was just,
the squibs.
You know,
the squibs?
Squibs.
Squibs.
And so some of our friends are also clients of Dr. Fishbein's, and PJ and Deb Fidler. And they had twin girls at home.
I've never heard of them before.
And
more than 4 hours apart, actually.
That's right. That's right. That's
same day?
Last time I'm doing that. Yeah, that was the same day. Yeah.
And they had sex at 36 weeks, and the twins came the next day. And I was so uncomfortable. I'm like, these babies are coming out. Like, I remember I texted Dr. Stu, and I'm like, if I have sex and go into labor at 35 and like 6 days, will you deliver? And he went, yes, yes, yes. He's like, but, you know, I remember you were just like, yes, but these babies are going to come when they want to come. Like, yeah. It's, and I'm like, I'm trying it. So we're like trying to have sex one day. It was like, it was awful. It was Twister.
It was Twister.
That's exactly right. It was the opposite.
Actually,
of what it.
Twister might have done it.
Right. Twister might have done it. Twister might have been better. And then, and at that point, I was 36 weeks. No, I was, yeah, almost 36 weeks. And then March 1st. I'm 37 and 2 days.
It all of a sudden started hailing.
What?
The thunder came. It was lightning. And Wolf went out, ran outside, put his jacket on. And boom, the lightning striked and it started hailing. And I can't remember. It was one of you that said the barometric pressure.
It was Yvonne.
Oh, it was Yvonne.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. It was the barometric pressure started it. And then like right after the hail happened, all hail broke loose upstairs. And you just heard, Steve! And so I went, ran upstairs, and there, and you were just screaming. She was just screaming at me.
Well,
is it true that the weather can do that? That the weather can affect labor?
I think there are people that believe that. I think there are people that believe that full moons can do that, and that a rapid change in barometric pressure, if it, you know, can do that. I don't know that there's any data to support that.
What are you talking about? You're a licensed medical doctor and an advocate of a chiropractor. Of course you believe.
But I went water skiing the day they had astrology. So I missed that
geometry, so, and astrology.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
You probably suck at Tetris.
Actually, yeah. I used to skip class to go water skiing, by the way, in medical school.
But did your water break?
It was one of those. I remember I went upstairs to our bathroom to go. I just had to go pee. And I was going pee, and it was literally, it went boom. And right as that popped, my bag broke.
We are going to take a quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby. Not even diaper rash.
Oh, really?
It happened simultaneously.
You were like in touch with the earth.
You might have been struck by lightning and not known it. Is that what happened?
Wow.
But it wasn't like the hail came down and then my bag broke. It happened. It was simultaneously.
With Mother Earth.
With Mother Earth. And then... the bag broke.
Have you been in thunderstorms since then?
Yes, and no bags.
Nothing.
Okay. You want to pee a little bit?
Unfortunately, not. No. But and then he was in the garage.
He is Steve.
He, being Steve, was in the garage, and I went downstairs, and I said, my water broke. And he was on top of a ladder, and he went, okay, all right.
I was fixing a noose.
For who?
And then that's funny. Yeah, I texted Dr. Stu, and I texted Beth. Yvonne and yeah. Beth, and I think you said you were in Century City, or you tried to make your way. You said you were going to wait in your office or something. You
for traffic or something? Was yeah, like,
something. It was
like 3, 4, 5 in the afternoon.
And Dr. Stu asked,
I don't remember.
Yeah. Okay, how far along is she? Is she close? And then you heard her scream, and you go, okay, she's close. So I'm on my way.
Well, it was one of those things. I mean, again, with the second pregnancy, you know, it was just, it happened so fast. I mean, the first or second contraction were pushing contractions. Yeah. They were not.
Oh, right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, because you had breech issues again with the twins.
Yeah. So the girl, I forgot her name, Violet, she was head down. She was baby A. She was on the bottom. She was head down. And Knox had always been breech.
Mm-hmm. Always.
And so we knew that going in, that's what we were looking
at. So Dr. Stu, for you, there was nothing there contraindicated to a natural birth or to a home birth.
No.
Even if this was a primate, first time that pregnancy?
No, it wouldn't. As long as some simple rules for twins for me. Obviously, I'm not the norm.
Yes.
But they need to be term, so about 35 weeks, yeah. 5 days or something like that. And they should be concordant, which is basically they should be within about 20% of each other by estimated fetal weight, which is done by ultrasound. And first baby, what I like to say, needs to be in what I call a longitudinal lie, which means that the baby either needs to be head down or it needs to be breech down in a proper breech position that would be okay for a singleton. So complete or frank breech.
Okay, so butt down.
And then as far as baby B goes, I really don't care what position baby B is in.
Why?
Because I'm trained to deliver baby B. If baby B won't come down by him or herself, either breech or head down, or the baby gets into trouble, I'm trained to reach up and grab him by the feet and pull him out.
Because the door's already open.
Because Violet has done the lion's share. Well, actually, Wolf did the lion's share of the work.
Really?
Whoa.
Right.
I think Steve did the lion's share of the work.
Yeah. But wait a minute.
That's why you went so fast. That's why you went so... You've talked about second babies.
Yeah. But in terms of the pathway being clear for Knox, the breech baby...
Baby B,
that was cleared by Wolf?
No.
Six years ago?
The fact that Violet came so quickly was cleared by Wolf. And
so baby B could be footling breech.
I don't try to turn babies at that point. Yeah, because if it's a footling breech, as long as the, you know, even we don't rupture the membranes right away, which is why there was 2 hours between. You know, somebody asked, I think you asked earlier, Kira, you know, is that normal? And generally, and then we went off on a tangent. And I think it's not normal because in the hospital setting with twins, you're in an operating room and you have the pediatric team, the NICU team, you got a bunch of nurses there, you got the anesthesiologist there, yeah. You got the doctor there, usually have an assistant or a resident or somebody else. You got all these people in the room. So twin A comes out, you know, they clamp the cord, they maybe let it pulsate for a while, but they don't wait for a very long time. They cut the cord, they leave the clamp on, and then because everybody's waiting, what I was taught was you reach up with an amnio hook, which is a little plastic thing, you break the bag of waters of the second twin, mm-hmm. and then... If the twin comes, then you have her push.
Do you have to wait for thunder and lightning to break the water?
No.
Or you can do it at any point? Okay.
No, then you don't have to.
You don't have to.
But see, that problem was the operating theaters at Cedars are so soundproof that you
don't hear it.
Know that it was, unless it was an earthquake, then you might feel it moving. And then you break the bag of waters. And then if it's head first, you have the mother push, even if she's not ready. And if it's foot breech or whatever else, then you would just reach up and do a breech extraction. That's how twins were normally delivered in the hospital. That's how I learned. That, you know, so the twins are generally 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes apart at the hospital and not
hours,
an hour,
2 hours
or even
apart,
half an hour or 2 hours or 4 hours. From
so your baby A was a boy. Was
no,
a
baby
girl.
A was Violet.
Violet. Yeah.
And she came out. And I think this is important to talk about because I used to be fearful of this until we went through it. And Steve can talk more about it than I can because I was so out of it when this happened. But the cord was wrapped around her neck twice. Violet's was. And
why were you out of it? Because was it not a quick labor?
It was a very quick labor, but I think I was just...
She's in the mode.
She was, you know, you're tired. Yeah. You know how Twitter. It is. It's just like...
Yeah, you were distracted
by... She was in the tub, in the zone.
I was in the tub. I was in the zone. Violet came out. You know, it's, you know how it is. It's just,
yeah,
you're
I know
just,
exactly
you're still in that
how
zone.
It is.
You know how it is. And,
So what was really cool is that for Wolf, I got to hold him first.
Okay.
You kind of delivered when Wolf was born.
Pretty much.
Davey took your hands and you pulled them out, and he was kicking and screaming. Wolf came out kicking and screaming. Okay,
and then when Violet came out, same on all. Sarah was on all fours.
I got to back up. Wolf first pregnancy, yes. Singleton baby. Davey is the female midwife who attended your birth.
Yes.
Steve catches.
Yes, I catch Wolf
kicking and screaming.
Yes.
Flash forward a couple of years.
A lot of years.
Now, Violet's the first of baby A.
Five and a half years.
And much different. Violet came out blue, not breathing, and limp. And the cord was wrapped. Right when I saw the cord on her neck, I immediately started peeling the cord back, and it was taut. It was very tight around her neck. And this is when, you know, my life was flashing before my eyes. Beth, the midwife, took Violet, baby A, and started wiping her face and put her and turned Sarah around and put Violet on Sarah's chest. And I'm watching this, and then Yvonne, our doula, sees this and says, "Steve, everything's fine. She's still getting life. The umbilical cord is attached. This is okay. This is fine," because she sees.
You're panicking.
Oh yeah, I have the 1,000-yard stare. I remember it vividly.
But it's interesting because you instinctively started to pull the cord off the baby's neck.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was wrapped around twice. It was one of those like
all tangled
maneuver
up.
The baby so you can get a little bit of slack to get it around.
But what
head.
I love is you weren't fearful to do that. Your like instincts just.
That was it. It was all
you didn't
instincts.
Even think about it. It was just instinct. You didn't go to medical school.
And then,
you didn't ask.
I don't
Dr.
think.
Stu, like,
have you
what
ever
I do?
Played
you
a doctor just... on TV?
Not well.
Not
no.
even. Not even that
close. I mean, I played a patient, but
oh, well, well, that maybe that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
HMO care.
So, but what happened is Beth, our midwife, was wiping her face, saying, "Come on, girl. Come on, baby girl. Come on, baby girl. Come on, baby girl." And there's nothing was happening. And then after Dr. Stu was monitoring Knox and like checked out Sarah, he focused his attention to Violet. And he went right to her foot and started flicking the bottom of her foot. And all of a sudden, color started coming back to her. And then she just did this. And then right when she did this faint little... that blue, it was like a purplish blue, just went into like a red and orange, and then it was like a light pink, and it was like, it was amazing.
That concludes part two of our Double Standard podcast. Be sure to share with your friends and visit us at informpregnancy.com for other great pre- and postnatal information. And make sure to come back for part three, the final portion of this discussion on twins and other types of birth.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay.
Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Bomb, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.